This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What's up, family? My name is Jefferson Smith. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Big question of the day. Supreme Court, state of democracy. Why are we trying to disrupt our most important international alliances? How is it connected to the investigation of the White House? And how do we make sure our elections actually yield the results that reflect, to a better degree, the will of the people? To connect a couple of those dots and to help talk about election security, Norman Solomon from Roots Action. The website is rootsaction.org. Norman Solomon joins us now. Norman, hello. Norman, can you hear me?
I cannot. Hello?
Norman, can you hear me now?
No, I cannot hear you.
Oh.
Unless you can hear me here.
I can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh, all right. So apparently you can hear me. Anyway, we're now talking. We'll pretend the last 7 seconds didn't happen. It is wonderful to hear your voice. Go ahead. You want to talk about election security. If people are concerned about the state of American elections, what ought we be doing and what good news is happening?
Well, to me, the good news is happening, and I'm with rootsaction.org. A statement was issued this morning, an open letter published by The Nation magazine, which really gets beyond the false choices that have been really propagated for the last 18 months. And those false choices have said to people one way or the other that either we protect our elections or we heighten tensions with Russia and move in a more confrontational mode that could include a military confrontation. And The Nation on their website today has published an open letter by more than 20 people of great, in most cases, renown in cultural and political circles across a wide swath of the political spectrum, saying that that's a false choice, that whether somebody is thousands and thousands of miles away or down the street, they should not be able to hack into voter registration files. They should not be able to intrude upon any part of the digital election process in this country. And at the same time, we don't want to be moving towards military confrontation between the two nuclear superpowers. So to me, that's very encouraging because the polarized debate in this country has, under the rubric of Russiagate, moved us more and more, frankly, towards a greater risk of nuclear apocalypse, which, of course, virtually anybody who is sane doesn't want.
And so you're saying if we disconnect our criticism of Russia, disconnect even our criticism of the president from the idea that our elections ought to be honest, that maybe that would help advance the argument that elections should be honest without ramping up tensions. How is that, correct me if I misconstrued your point, but how is that being received by folks out in the world?
Well, the beginning of the title is Common Ground, and it's really, as you alluded to, an attempt to move beyond these sort of stalemate discussions that have gotten locked in the last 18 or 20 months in this country. And we're now speaking just a few hours after The Nation published this open letter. And what remains to be seen is the response, but it's already been republished by a number of other websites. As we speak, a petition drive is launching, which people can join in at The Nation website to read and then act upon the open letter in support of it. At rootsaction.org, we also, during this hour, actually, are launching the petition campaign. Partners with us, along with The Nation and Roots Action, are three other organizations, Just Foreign Policy, World Beyond War, and a group that I know many of Tom Hartman's listeners know full well through Tom's great coverage of them and support of them, and that is the organization Progressive Democrats of America. So I think it's quite auspicious that these five groups have moved ahead and are really trying to, so to speak, take the bull and often the BS by the horns and say, look, we of course want to secure the digital well-being and security of our election process. We do not want to use that concern in any way to move us closer to a confrontation between countries that each have several thousand nuclear weapons in their arsenals. And I would encourage people to take a look at the open letter. You may want to mention to them, Jefferson, some of the signers, because we really have a startling array of people who have really taken a firm stand here. One of the most prominent who actually has been a very strong supporter of Hillary Clinton is Gloria Steinem.
And yeah, I see some list. Noam Chomsky, John Dean, Bill Richardson, former governor, Walter Mosley, Valerie Plame. There are others as well. Who's the audience for the letter?
It's really wide ranging. I mean, we have some Republicans who are signers, former Republicans, as you mentioned, John Dean, the who was the Nixon White House counsel. And really, the audience is anybody who is concerned about the future. I know that sounds broad, but the reality is it's people who are deeply concerned about reports of election interference, and also those who are deeply concerned about but may have shunted off in the side of their minds concern about the real risk of nuclear annihilation through a confrontation militarily between the world's two leading superpowers. And I think, frankly, we have forgotten to a large extent what the consequences of nuclear war would be. I find it very striking that the wonderful upsurge of activism to deal with the climate emergency that the Trump regime refuses to acknowledge and that progressives and others are trying to confront this climate emergency, very rarely do we hear about the scientifically proven phenomenon of nuclear winter, which would be the result, not in decades, but in a matter of weeks, of a nuclear war between the two superpowers. And what that entails is basically ending the viability of agriculture on this planet. So I think we need to recalibrate and in many ways see the forest, not just the trees. The trees are the onslaught of news about Russia. And the forest is what's at stake in the big picture in U.S.-Russian relations. And when we get that big picture, we can get off this war hawk mania that has so engulfed the mass media. And I'm not just talking about or particularly talking about right-wing media. I'm talking about formerly very level-headed people like Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, who has behaved, in my personal opinion, irresponsibly to try to jack up this hysteria, this frenzy against Russia.
So what would be, if one were concerned about not only general interference of American elections, but in particular Russian interference of American elections, if one were concerned not only with various influences on the current president of the United States, but in fact, Vladimir Putin interference in relationships and influence on this president of the United States. How would you suggest that a responsible commentator or journalist comport themselves? Talk about it more, talk about it less, talk about it differently.
Yeah, I think it means dealing with facts, not as connecting dots that are very speculative, and also putting in perspective the fact that, yes, Vladimir Putin is a violator of human rights. The United States, under Obama and Trump, has been embracing and aiding governments such as Saudi Arabia and Egypt, which engage in torture and by any measure are far worse in human rights. Let's also remember that the people who were running the Soviet Union during the 1960s, Kosygin and Brezhnev, would have made Putin look like Thomas Jefferson, a real democratic leader. Brezhnev and Kosygin ran essentially a police state called the Soviet Union. And yet, President Lyndon Johnson, in what was called the Spirit of Glassboro a little bit over 50 years ago, held a much heralded summit meeting with Kosygin, and it was rightly seen as a step away from the nuclear brink. So I think it's a matter of putting all this in perspective.
And so the takeaway is nuclear is bad, and therefore, is it be nicer to Russia, or is it be more focused in one's critique, or is it focus on sanctity of elections and focus on why Donald Trump is bad and say the word Russia fewer times? What's the therefore for the activist, for the elected official, for the journalist?
I think that the takeaway, the therefore, is that we've got to get away from false choices. We've got to get to, as the title of this open letter says, it's on the Nation website, we've got to get to common ground where we can take effective action to safeguard U.S. elections and at the same time, not out of the goodness of our heart, but for future generations that we want to have lives ahead, we need to improve relations between the U.S. and Russia. After all, if we want democracy to flourish in our country, that can't happen if our country doesn't exist after a nuclear war.
Is there, it's interesting, I'm finding myself conflicted as I listen and wanting to pause on offering my own opinion and continue to investigate, but maybe even investigate sort of our alternative viewpoints. Is there any risk that you see that a general, hey, calm down about Russia, could remove an important piece of the investigation of what is happening with the disruption of NATO alliances, the disruption of Brexit, the disruption of the small L liberal social order that came together after World War II?
I think the far greater danger is the momentum of where we are, because as the saying goes, if you keep moving in a direction, you're likely to get there. And so we need to be real about the direction we're moving in terms of these confrontations. This in no way means there should be a halt to the investigations. The Mueller investigation should continue. We need to recognize that a lot of this on Capitol Hill is politicized.
Thanks, Norman. They're about to cut you off, and I appreciate the time.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. That was Norman Solomon, RootsAction.org, the website. I'm Jeff. And Norman, finish your point. We're back with Free Speech TV.
Hi there.
Go ahead. Finish your point.
So I was saying that when you have momentum in a certain direction, then you need to look at where that would carry you. And at the same time, of course, these investigations, if and when they have integrity, they ought to continue. So again, I think it's getting beyond the false choice. Of course, we want to get to the bottom of it. Again, speaking for myself, clearly Trump is a racketeer. He's the worst kind of predatory capitalist. And I think it helps to reframe a lot of this discourse in a way that sees this as a colossal abuse of power. And frankly, Trump has engaged in that abuse of power before and after he entered the White House, not only in dealing with oligarchs in Russia, but there are oligarchs in Saudi Arabia, in Israel, in China, and dare I say it, there are oligarchs in the United States. And I am, as you mentioned, with RootsAction.org, which is a group that on the very day of Trump's inauguration launched an impeachment campaign together with the group Free Speech for People. We've gathered 1.4 million signatures at ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org. And Trump's violations of the emoluments clauses of the Constitution, which prohibit a president benefiting financially from government activities while in office, I mean, that is a travesty that the Congress has not moved ahead with impeachment on those grounds.
Yeah, so I think I hear you saying is folks can go after Donald Trump on other grounds, and folks can, so other grounds than Russia, and people can try to preserve the sanctity of elections on grounds other than Russia. Here's something I also care about. So, and maybe other people do too, but I know that I do. And that is, I really am concerned about the state of the world order. And I really am concerned. And it's not because I think that the United States is an actor without sin. That is not at all my view. I am more concerned about a world where Vladimir Putin has greater power. I am wanting a world where democracies, real democracies, and the United States can barely be called one any longer, but where real democracies have greater power. I still think alliance with Europe and the United States makes us stronger rather than weaker. And by stronger, I mean stronger so that we can be more loving. I think that it is better for Great Britain to be together than be separate, I think. And my concern is the assault right now isn't just on a single election. The assault right now isn't just happening. It isn't just based on a single president, that there is an effort to deconstruct the power alliances after World War II. Am I overstating the case? Where am I wrong about that? Or if I'm not entirely wrong about that, what should we do about it that avoids criticizing Russia?
Well, I think we should criticize every government that violates human rights, and certainly the Russian government does that, as you noted, ours does as well. And if you're going to look at the history of what's happened in the last 30 years, the United States promised explicitly not to expand NATO one inch closer to Russia after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And as you know, the very opposite has happened. So why is it that U.S. power bloc militarily gets to move up to the Russian border?
Yep. We're back with your calls. Pam from WCPT, Ain't Afraid of Me. How you doing, Pam?
Hi, Jeff. As we say, trying to make it, and it is very difficult. Jeff, I am just disgusted with Trump and every other thing that is going on. And my concern is, and I'll relate this to the Supreme Court, my concern is how is Democratic leadership and how is the DNC going to deal with if we're going to take over the House, the Democratic wave. So how are we going to deal with that? And then how are we going to deal with this Supreme Court nomination? It is my hope that they do decide to stand firm, all the Democrats, and vote no. I'm concerned with Kavanaugh regarding civil rights, regarding, voting rights, gerrymandering. I'm concerned about all of those issues.
Yep.
And I'm not quite sure if Schumer and Nancy Pelosi will stand up to the pressure not to bring it up. Now, they were real clear. Many people were real clear about their opposition to what Representative Waters said. I wish they'd take that same approach when they deal with Donald Trump and the rest of these repulsive Republicans. And I only say that because they're supporting Trump and his corruption.
Yeah, I made the analogy on Monday to soccer that, you know, that players are willing to cheat in soccer because goals are so valuable, and Republicans are willing to cheat on Supreme Court justices because Supreme Court justices last so very long. And there can be a critique of Democrats that they sometimes view themselves as players and they sometimes view themselves as referees. Sometimes they're trying to win and sometimes they want a fair game. And it's a really good question, which is the more just role and which is the smarter role given where we are politically. But Pam, what I offered on Monday and what I hope to have the chance to offer lots and lots more times is I think sure. At some level, this is our job. At some level, I think this is our need to build up a media that is pro-democracy, that is pro-social, that is pro-human being, not just fighting in favor of an era of money and robots, but an era of people and purpose, and that we can't rely merely on elected officials to do all our messaging for us. As far as something you said about the Democratic wave, if I were going to advise people to do a thing, go out and pick a legislative race. Get 25 friends to pick a swing district state legislative race in a state where the state legislature is turnable. Because after this election will be 2020, and after 2020 will be a census, and after that there will be redistricting. And that will decide whether or not we have a Congress that does in fact reflect the will of the people, that is in fact majoritarian, or do we have what we have right now, where a majority of members of Congress are not elected by the party that even a plurality of the American people support, where, in fact, we have a narrower group of wealthy interests having outsized control, not only because of their donations, but in fact, because of our districts and the money they spend and the suppression of votes. And those districts will be decided largely by state legislatures. So if you want to, if there's one thing you can do, if you, there's one thing you want to encourage the Democratic National Committee to do, and they don't run all the stuff, they can do some stuff, is persuade them to work on state legislative races. Because, by the way, those are decided by not as many votes. They're not quite as expensive. They are winnable. And if you have state legislatures that can draw better districts, democracy has a better chance. Thank you, Pam, for calling in. We'll be back in just a moment. This is the Tom Hartman Show. We got a bunch of calls. We'll have a break, and we're going to try to take a bunch of them.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I just say, doing this makes me feel stronger every time. I hope it does. Likewise for you. We love you. ...170 current and recent members of the American Political Science Association voted on presidential greatness. It takes a lot to rank below James Buchanan, who oversaw the descent to the Civil War. It takes a pretty good amount to rank below Richard Nixon, president to be resigned from office under threat of being convicted under articles of impeachment. Donald Trump's achievement is that he managed to rank last. He's managed to rank last after only less than 2 years. Even among Republicans on this list, he was still near the bottom. By the way, Barack Obama ranked 8th. That's top 10. People are wondering how different these two presidents are. People have mentioned the differences of their race, of their background, from rich to middle class, from black to white, their activist background versus the real estate mogul background, their comportment of politeness versus not, their approach to family versus whatever Donald Trump does. But there's another difference. One was good and the other's bad. And it's kind of simple, and I'm sorry that my line is kind of a dumb line, but I promised I'd bring it up, and I did. All right, Marlon from Mobile, might be Mobile, Alabama. How you doing, Marlon?
No, that's Myron.
Oh, Myron. Oh, I'm sorry, Myron. I misspoke. Go ahead.
That's okay. I got a question. I don't recall anybody mentioning this on the Tom show. But has anyone looked at the prospect that Trump is a Manchurian candidate for the Russians? Because if this is true, you know, they got to be holding something over him for him to be acting like this.
I think it's been talked about a lot. And we had Jonathan Chait on earlier, and his take of who wrote an article in New York Magazine, which I encourage you to read. I will repost it. My Twitter handle is at Jefferson D. Smith. And he stopped short of saying, I'm not saying Donald Trump is a Manchurian candidate, but he agrees with you that it does appear, there at least evidence to suggest that there's lots of levers on Donald Trump from Russia, whether that's levers of being able to discredit him from videos they've taken, from various intelligence exercises, to the fact that he got $1 billion in loans. At a time when American banks weren't lending, he got them from Russian banks, and Russian banks have close ties to the to state leadership in Russia. That his son said most of their money was coming from Russia. So, you know, how strong the strings are and how often they get pulled, who knows? But I do think, to answer your question, that there are a lot of people who are wondering about there being some strings. I want to hear from Peach in Tacoma, who has some good news.
Hello?
Peach?
Hi.
What's up, Peach?
Yes. I none of my friends would accuse me of being a Pollyanna.
I heard your call for some kind of light in this darkness.
Yes.
Positive images and development. One for me is the Poor People's Campaign, which has which is being led by William Barber, started in North Carolina, and is continuing the work that Martin Luther King began 50 years ago, connecting militarism, poverty, and corporate, you know, labor stuff to create a fusion movement that is gaining steam all over the country. That is something that listeners can plug into. It's led by people of color, and it is supported by people whose privilege can be leveraged. And this is a huge development nationwide. Secondly, my denomination, the Episcopalians, just had their convention in Austin. It happens every 3 years. At that convention, unanimously, the Diocese of Cuba was readmitted to our national, our communion, and trans people were, it was voted unanimously that they were included in all our stuff. So, you know, a trans person can be a priest, a bishop, anything in the Episcopal Church. That's a huge development and very positive.
A dear friend of mine who I just spent the weekend, a portion of the weekend with, was an investment banker and mm-hmm. left investment banking to become an Episcopal priest and was talking to me about that very same thing. And
well, so that's a very positive development. And I think listeners need to know that there are portions of Christianity that are not part of what I call the American KKK Christian Church, which is like the German Christian Church under Nazi Germany, completely co-opted and needs to be resisted on every level theologically. But I don't want to be sidetracked on that. Positive images.
The Poor People's Campaign. People can check it out at poorpeoplescampaign.org. And Peach, thank you very much. Vicki, you want to tell people to get the message out from Bellevue, Washington? Vicki, you still with us? I think we lost Vicki. Paul from Long Island.
Hi, I'm just calling because I got an email from the Courage Campaign this morning about the proposed merger between Sinclair Broadcast Group and Tribune Media. If this is allowed to go through, they will have access to approximately 72% of American homes with Trump propaganda. And so the FCC is taking public comments until tomorrow on this proposed merger. So they asked that we take a few minutes and send a comment to the FCC. The website is fcc.gov/ecfs/filings/express. And the proceeding number is 17-179.
Say those pieces again. This is really important. If we're going to build the building blocks of a democracy, that has to include the conversation, and that means the media. It means the people have to have influence over and opportunity to participate in honest-to-goodness, pro-democracy, pro-social conversation and news and media, and not merely pro-property propaganda. What is, say again, the information for people to do something about it, Paul?
Yeah, the website is fcc.gov/E as in elephant, C as in Charlie, F as in Frank, S as in Sam, /filings/express.
Paul, thank you so much for calling
in. The proceeding number is 17-179.
17-179. Going to Michael from Imperial Beach, California, nuclear war and oligarchs. That doesn't sound like happy news or comment, Michael.
Hey, Jefferson. Actually, I'm trying to get your take on what Mr. Solomon was saying. Of course, no human being wants nuclear war on this planet, whether you're poor or whether you're rich. But it sounded like what he was pushing is that because of that threat, that us poor people, we just have to live with what we're dealt, that we have a worldwide class of oligarchs, Koch brothers, the Russian mafia, Chinese. That are we really just stuck in this place where we have to deal with these oligarchs ruling us because we're so afraid of nuclear war What do you think, Jefferson?
Michael, I am so glad you called. And I am not going to wax expert in response to your question, nor am I even going to commit myself to my current view, because I was challenged by what he said. And that and when I'm challenged by what somebody says, it makes me not want to rush to my first emotional response. But part of my response was exactly the one you offered, that it does. And I've been wrestling with it. So a little bit about how I came to be in this mess. I grew up when my folks would take me to Beyond War meetings, where my dad was motivated to greater social action by the peace movement. And I would, you know, I'd be there, you know, playing tiddlywinks by myself or with another kid, you know, while the grown folks met. And I wrestle with this notion. I think the progressive movement needs to have an honest conversation about this before it seems sort of obvious. But right now, and obviously we want to avoid nuclear war, and in the advent of the nuclear weapon, everything has changed except for our mode of thinking. And if our mode of thinking doesn't change, then we are doomed to unparalleled catastrophe. That said, if there is a need to fight for democracy and fight for equality, does fighting include fighting? And I think, all right. and that is a really important moral question. It's a really important strategic question. It's one that I want to be humble before I offer my own opinion. But his comment both challenged me in a positive way and made me want to push back a little bit, because I think we have to be willing to have a conversation about, listen, if oligarchs have nuclear weapons, it doesn't mean that we have to just do or should be put in a position to just do what they say. And yeah, right. I understand those oligarchs are also Americans, but anyway, so I too was challenged. Anything further you want to say? What else am I missing?
Okay, well, no, I liked your take, Jeff. The last thing I will say is the oligarchs, they're set in stone. It's their children. If the children of the oligarchs follow in the footsteps of the oligarchs and don't grow a conscience, then we have now become a kingdom of oligarchs, and we are all just peasants. If these children change, we might have a chance, but I doubt the children of the oligarchs are ever going to change their ways. Your thoughts?
Yeah, all right. So first of all, support the estate tax, the inheritance tax. Ain't no such thing as a death tax. If somebody calls it a death tax, it is more aptly a rich kid's tax. Almighty God takes every penny away from us when we die. You are left with nothing. Your kids are left with something. So yeah, we've got to think in terms of generational politics. Second point, and relatedly, the court didn't just get taken today. It got taken by two generations of political movement. I would put the starting point, although it's never really a starting and end point, I'd put the starting point right after Brown versus Board of Education, and my site would be McLean's book, Democracy in Chains. But I want to say one other thing about Mr. Solomon, about the article in The Nation, or about that editorial, because I do think it gets to a hard part, and it's so tempting in media to avoid the hard part, just to continue to gin up support for whatever you're saying, get easy clicks, get easy support. But I think we got to be willing to get to the hard part. And I think he's addressing some of the hard part. And what I want to think about is there a way to both pursue what it sounded to me was a little bit too much. Okay, we will avoid too much critique, too much beating of the anti-Russian drum because we don't want to upset a nuclear power. But there might be a way to continue to be aggressive, to continue to be in depth about our analysis of the impact that Russia is having in the global order, while still being able to speak out of that same side of the mouth saying, yeah, nuclear war still sucks, and let's figure out a way to resolve this conflict that does not necessitate armed conflict. I think I don't think you have to say, oh no, it's only about domestic stuff, and then whatever, you know, nuclear powers agree, we got to make sure we don't disagree too powerfully. I think there's a way maybe to thread that needle. I am fascinated by this discussion. Mike, I'll give you the last word, then I got to move on to the next caller.
I just want to thank you, Jeff. There's other people waiting. Thank you, Jefferson.
All right. Thanks, man. Let's go to Carol. Carol, who wants to ensure democracy. Me too, Carol.
Hey, Jefferson Smith. The other day, a fellow called in. You called him delicious. I think you're delicious.
It's very kind.
And you deserve your own show on free speech TV and other media. But let me get to the point, other than complimenting your work. We need poll watchers to volunteer for campaigns and for the Democratic Party during every election, not just the presidential election, but also when the midterms come up. And I don't mean the people that get paid per hour to, you know, do work for the count, their precinct or whatever. I'm talking about volunteers, poll watchers going in. I volunteered for the Obama campaign as a poll watcher in Atlanta. And I got to tell you, crooked business happens everywhere. 3 out of 8 machines did not boot up at 7 o'clock in the morning when the polls opened in a heavily black district. Or I'm sorry, polling station. This will happen again. You can only imagine what they're going to try to do during the midterms and also during the 2020
election. That's a great point. That thank you so much for the call. Thanks for the kind words, but also thanks for that point. And if people are looking for local stuff to get involved with, poll watching, yes, and even also look long term. County clerks are often voted for, and those elections can often be won because they're not often as highly contested or as expensive, and they make a big impact on voting results. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson. And I think all y'all are delicious. Carol, I'm doing something unorthodox. If you're still with us, I want you to give us more information on where people can find out about poll watching. Carol, can you hear me?
I'm back.
You're back. I know that that doesn't normally happen, but I wanted you to give more information about how people could do the poll watching.
Oh, geez. I would just say call your local Democratic Party or the office of the candidate, especially in swing districts and highly contended districts, and just volunteer for either the party or a candidate and tell them that you want to be a poll watcher on election day. You want to volunteer, and you'll get there before 7 in the morning. Make sure those machines boot up.
Carol, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. And thanks for listening.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Thomas from Las Cruces, New Mexico.
How are you doing today, Jeff? You're doing a great job out there.
Hey, thanks. You're doing a great job, too.
There you go. Hey, I got a comment I would like the public to kind of pay attention to a little bit. Study a little bit of history in the organization of the unionization of this nation back in the 30s. I believe if you read some of this and think about it, we're going backwards to where the people had to get beat by cops and strikebreakers and Pinkertons in order to get a livable wage and shorter work hours. I wonder what you think of that take of where we may be ending up, and maybe not to such far off future.
The nostalgia that Ronald Reagan was calling people to when he said, make America great again. And when Donald Trump stole the line and put it on hats, was not a nostalgia of the middle class in the 60s and 70s, although people in working class states might have thought, which is, I guess, every state, but in, I'll say, the industrial Midwest, may have thought that that what he was harkening to. To me, the thing that he was harkening to were, in fact, what you were saying, was the Lochner era, when the courts were saying that democracy could not interfere with the power of property, when wealth disparities were about what they are now again, where the mm-hmm. role of women and people of color was not bending the arc of history towards justice, was not recognizing that we have to be anti-oppression allies, and that means making space and giving power to new voices, but in fact, calling backwards to all the bad stuff. I think you're absolutely right. And I do think, by the way, you're right about something else, which is the time in history we are now is the time in history that has to be looking at 30 and 40 years ahead. The reason when Carol was calling, I said, heck yeah, poll watching and also county clerks, is we have to get motivated about moves that impact the long game, not only moves mm-hmm. that are the cat chasing the laser beam.
That's very correct. Now, how do we pull this under one umbrella? How do we get all our national movements like Black Lives Matters, climate people changes, which I believe in as well? How do we get all this under one umbrella and get a big enough movement of people to make a difference?
All right. Those are slightly different questions. And the first thing I want to
understand.
I like both of them.
I
like both of them.
I'm a little nervous on this.
No, I like that you asked both of them. One question I heard you ask was, how do we get everything under one umbrella? The other is, how do we get a movement big enough to accomplish what we need? I think you
Correct.
Can do the second without necessarily doing the first. Because I think that we think, all right, let me first also start with humility. I think this is one of the most important, hardest questions, and I don't want to suggest that I'm going to offer a complete answer. But I will say that, yeah, pick the party of your choice, But if we work for democracy, if I had to pick one word, I would fight for democracy. And a because I think over time, the people generally get it right. That over time, the people generally get it right. And that means that, yes, Black Lives Matter, and that people, the majority of people, recognize that. The majority of people want to fight against oligarchy. So if I had one rhetorical umbrella, it would be democracy. I don't think it has to be one ruler's umbrella. We're back. I want to hear from Thomas. Ask the question, Thomas. Say your question about where you think we need to go, or how do we accomplish it?
I would like to see all our movements come together. How do we all get together as people? You know what I mean? With different issues that are important to us, but we don't blend into the next group of people for these things.
So it's such a huge question. And again, I want to offer some humility. Rhetorically, what I've been saying here is the rhetorical umbrella, the rhetorical uniter that comes mm-hmm. closest to me is democracy. Someone else might say humanity. And I think that democracy and humanity, and if I were given three, I would say I think three things could unite a supermajority of people. Maybe they're under the same political party, maybe they're not. Maybe they vote for the same candidate for president, maybe they don't. Hopefully they at least do enough times to get a Supreme Court that protects democracy. But that if I had three instead of one, it would be, how do we make sure, yes, we save democracy? How do we save the middle class? And how do we save the planet? I think that addressing our systems of government, addressing our systems of economy, including how our systems of government are anti-oppressive, how our systems of economy are anti-oppressive, and also how do we work on a natural environment that doesn't melt the planet? I could, if you gave me 12, I would do 12. But if I had three, if I just had three, it'd be save democracy, save the middle class, save the planet.
Well, I appreciate that. I wish I had more to offer. I got a lot on my mind, but I don't know how to put it all together.
This is why we get together like this.
Overwhelming task.
Each of us offers our piece, and together we're made stronger, and we appreciate your time. Victor from WCPT Ain't Afraid of Me, Chicago. What's up?
Hey, buddy. You're doing a great job, and the program is moving right along, but we forgot two important facts.
Uh-oh.
One is that Donald Trump never did sign off on the sanctions against Russia.
I know.
And number two, the Mueller team has already gotten 13 indictments and 5 guilty pleas from Russian operatives and people that are involved with Russia and the Trump campaign. And to believe that there is no influence by Putin on the old President Trump is just delusional. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, it's just delusional. And another point, Russia does not have a nuclear arsenal since the 80s. They could not maintain a nuclear arsenal since the 60s.
We're going to have to take your point and leave it there, because what I've got to say is thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to the team. Thank you to Sean and to Shira and to Nate. Thank you to Tom, who will be back tomorrow. My name is Jefferson Smith. Thank you, democracy. And again, let me leave you with this. That ultimately, a lot of this stuff isn't anybody's job, so it has to be all of our jobs. You are the coalition of the benevolently irrational, the good people doing good things for no good reason. And with you, democracy is possible, and you are priceless. Definition of priceless: worth a lot, not for sale. We'll be back soon. I want to say thanks to everybody. Tom will be back tomorrow. I'm Jefferson Smith, Twitter handle Jefferson D. Smith. Thanks for all the callers, and thank you, democracy. I'll be back Friday.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.